Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's exactly 5 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to this edition of Africa Link. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. As usual, we are live on Facebook. In case you'd like to contribute to the program, just go to our page, DW Africa.
Coming up, South Africa has a new cabinet, but how has it been received, especially by President Cyril Ramaphosa opponents?
We reject it categorically. It means Cyril Ramaphosa is a weak president. He has bowed to factional pressure, and we don't think at all that it's going to save South Africa.
Burundi Human Rights Commission disagrees with remarks by the UN Human Rights Chief comparing the country to a human butcher house.
It's very surprising considering the current situation in the country and the progress so far we've made in all aspects of human rights sector.
These are some of the stories that we have lined up for you, but first we hear what has been making headlines around the world.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. South Africa's parliament today passed a motion to carry out land expropriation without compensation. The proposal to amend the constitution was brought by the radical left party Economic Freedom Fighters leader Julius Malema. President Cyril Ramaphosa has called land reform one of his government's priorities, but is seen as seeking a consensus solution so as not to upset white farmers who would be hardest hit by the expropriation measures. These aim at redistributing the land among landless black South Africans. Nigeria's military says it has rescued more than 1,100 people, including women and children, who had been held by the extremist Islamic group Boko Haram in different parts of the Lake Chad region near Cameroon. The announcement comes a week after Boko Haram abducted 110 girls from their school in Dapchi in Yobe State. In his keynote speech at the 5th German-African Economic Forum in the German city of Dortmund today, Ghana's president Nana Akufo-Addo called for a new kind of leadership in Africa.
Leaders who are committed to governing their peoples according to the rule of law, respect for individual liberties and human rights, and the principles of democratic accountability. Leaders who are determined to free their peoples from a mindset of dependence, aid, charity and handouts.
On Wednesday, the Ghanaian president will meet Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin, where good governance and German investments in Ghana will be among the central topics of discussion. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Despite a five-hour ceasefire for humanitarian reasons called by the Syrian regime's ally Russia, fighting continued today in the eastern Ghouta district of Syria. Jens Lerke of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said in Geneva that ongoing combat had made it impossible to bring in aid or rescue the wounded.
It's a question of life and death, if there ever was any question of life and death. This is it. We need 30 days cessation of hostilities throughout Syria, as the Security Council resolution demands.
Hundreds of people have died during 10 days of government bombardment of eastern Ghouta, a rebel-held area on the outskirts of the capital, Damascus. The assault has been among the most deadly air campaigns of a war, now entering its eighth year. A court in Prague ordered the release of Kurdish-Syrian leader Saleh Muslim, who was detained in the Czech capital at Turkey's request. Muslim, 67, is the former head of the main Syrian Kurdish political party PYD. Turkey put Muslim on a list of wanted terrorists 2 weeks ago. Ankara has been seeking his extradition in connection with a February 2016 attack in the Turkish capital, which killed 30 people. Turkey has vowed to keep pursuing the Kurdish-Syrian politician and condemned the Prague's judge's decision. At least 14 people were killed in landslides and by collapsed buildings during a powerful earthquake in the Papua New Guinea highlands, local authorities said. The 7.5 magnitude quake early on Monday happened on a remote area with difficult access. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Christina Kripal.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipora Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. We would love to hear from you, so please drop us your comment on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We start off in South Africa, where new cabinet ministers are being sworn in at the parliamentary buildings. President Cyril Ramaphosa named the new cabinet that saw the return of some ministers who had been controversially sacked by former President Jacob Zuma. The new cabinet has been well received by a section of South Africans, while others have sharply criticized the new list of ministers, describing it as a balancing act to please the ruling African National Congress factions. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kumalo looks at the cabinet and the task that lies ahead.
The positives of President Ramaphosa's cabinet have been the return of former finance minister Nhlanhla Nene. Nene had created huge confidence in the financial market, so much that when former President Jacob Zuma fired him, there were huge losses in the stock market. Another goal scored by Ramaphosa was the comeback of another former finance minister, Pravin Gordhan, who also got fired after falling out with Zuma. He is now in charge of the state enterprises, many of which are on the brink of collapse due to gross corruption, some of which involved President Zuma's ministers, son, and the Gota family. However, the presence of some ministers linked to Mr. Zuma and fingered in the state capture allegations has angered many. These include former Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba, who has now been shifted to Home Affairs, and former Social Development Minister Batabile Dlamini, who now heads the Women Ministry. Gigaba is alleged to have played a role in helping the Guptas to siphon millions of dollars from the state-owned companies while he headed that ministry. Mbuyiseni Ndlozi is the spokesperson for the Economic Freedom Fighters Party.
We reject it categorically as a reshuffle of people that have presided over the state capture. It means Cyril Ramaphosa is a weak president. He has bowed to factional pressure, and we don't think at all that it's going to save South Africa.
However, political analyst Livwani Ndou says while Ramaphosa did well by removing some ministers like David Van Rooyen and Musebenzi Zwane, alleged to be at the center of the state capture, he also had to please another faction of the party that did not support him.
I think there are certain people that he has included in the cabinet that he didn't like. Maybe in the interest of unity in the ANC, he has to try his best to accommodate those that were seen not to be supporting him. There are areas that the president has done very, very well. There are areas that the president has actually compromised himself.
Ramaphosa's balancing act continued today when he addressed the House of Traditional Leaders, who were keen to hear how he plans to redistribute the land. Ramaphosa told the traditional leaders that he wants the land reform tackled immediately. However, how it will be handled remains the challenge for the newly appointed agriculture and rural development ministers, as analysts have already warned that taking land without compensation, as demanded by some, will send the economy tumbling on its knees.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg, South Africa. Now, Zippy, President Ramaphosa is being criticized because in this new cabinet, there are no young people.
Yeah,
that is the big criticism. No young people in this new cabinet.
Yes, you're right. And of course, on our Facebook page, people are also talking about it. It's grabbed the attention of many. And Abdullahi Kales actually thinks reshuffling cabinet is the best solution to move a country economy forward. He says, unlike his country, where unperformed cabinets maintain the seat perpetually without caution for their failure.
And we have this one from Becky Mololo. He says, a typical South African sing and dance when a new leader is appointed, and after 1 year, they start throwing stones at him.
You're right. A quick one also from Cornelius Tamakela, who says it's too early to start this kind of discussion. Allow the new president to settle in and make the right decisions for his country. So interesting comments, but now we move on to Syria, where there have been reports of fresh violence, including airstrikes in the rebel stronghold of Eastern Ghouta in Syria. This is despite a daily five-hour truce that Russia declared a short while ago. The UN says the renewed fighting makes delivering aid impossible. More than 500 civilians have been reported killed since the violence broke out. Martin Melios, the regional humanitarian coordinator for CARE International in the Middle East based in Amman, Jordan, has been telling DW's Amrita Chima what his colleagues in Eastern Ghouta are saying about the situation on the ground.
They have been telling us that after 10 days of unprecedented levels of violence and aerial bombardment, that they had a rather quiet night. And then, unfortunately, around lunchtime, again, we got the information from our partners on the ground that the aerial bombardment had resumed and people were running for their lives again. And basically now we have really trouble to re-establish communication at the moment.
And were your people on the ground able to establish where this bombardment was coming from? Do they think it was Syrian government forces responsible for this? Because Russians are saying that, in fact, rebels have also been shelling and firing mortars.
I mean, that is very difficult for us to say. I mean, we have been seeing that bombardment in the last 10 days and, you know, kind of preparations for a ground offensive by the Syrian regime. So it's very difficult to establish who is shelling where exactly. But what I can tell you is that the humanitarian situation has really deteriorated to the degree that the people don't know where they can get their food from tomorrow.
And are you optimistic that this, you know, temporary humanitarian ceasefire, which is supposed to be in place, will allow you to take some aid into the besieged area of Eastern Ghouta?
The 5 hours a day, certainly that is not sufficient time to bring in any kind of humanitarian aid. So we are definitely calling for the implementation of the UN Security Council resolution that calls for humanitarian 30-day ceasefire all over Syria, including Eastern Ghouta.
Martin Melios, the Regional Humanitarian Coordinator for CARE International in the Middle East, based in Amman, Jordan, speaking to DW's Amrita Chima.
From Syria, we head back to Africa, and Burundi has been at the limelight for all reasons, including being the first in Africa to pull out of International Criminal Court, ICC. This time, it is a statement by UN Human Rights Chief comparing it to a human butcher house, which has evoked angry reactions. Now, Burundian Human Rights Commission is accusing the UN chief of not getting his facts right and exaggerating the situation. From Bujumbura, Apollinaire Nyirora sent this report, which starts with that controversial remark.
Burundi, Northern Rakhine and Myanmar have become some of the most prolific slaughterhouses of humans in recent times.
That's the statement from UN Human Rights Council Chief Zaid Rad Al Hussein that is causing ripples here in Burundi. But the head of the Burundian Human Rights Commission says the country is not at war, as he alleges. I talked to the chairman, Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza.
It's very surprising, considering the current situation in the country and the progress so far we've made in all aspects of human rights sector. Currently, the country is not at war or any sort of conflict. There are no signs that show that there are mass killings or activities jeopardizing the human rights sector anyway.
Though he didn't give details on the situation of human rights in Burundi, Baribonekeza says figures at their office show that the situation has improved.
Looking at figures at our disposal for the year 2017 and the beginning of 2018, all we can say is that the security situation is under control. People are going on with their daily work, and not so many come to us to complain that their human rights have been violated in any way. This means that the human rights situation is currently good.
According to the United Nations, over 1,200 people were killed and more than 400,000 others have been forced into exile since the outbreak of the crisis caused by the third-term bid of President Pierre Nkurunziza in April 2015.
Apollinaire Nyirora there for us in Bujumbura.
And going back to our top story, where we did ask, is the move to reshuffle the cabinet good for South Africa's economic stability? I have to read one very fast one here from Cornelius, who says that the new president has his own plans and ideas. If he finds these people competent enough to help him drive his agenda, then it's a step in the right direction to engage them to work for him. So that is in reaction to the new move of naming new cabinet ministers.
Absolutely.
By Ramaphosa. So keep those comments coming and we will keep reading them here at DW Africa. Welcome back once again to the program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We are also live on Facebook. In case you'd like to comment, go straight to our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, immigration dominates elections in Italy with fear of deportation of more than 600,000 illegal migrants.
We've never done something wrong. I come here every day after work to meet other Senegalese guys. I'm not a thief or a rapist, and neither are my friends here. I came here to seek a better life. There are also Italians who steal, like there are bad guys amongst us.
We will also hear about a bill that could change the lives of 19 million people living with disability in Nigeria.
But there is more happening there, Zippy. Many people all over the world still fly with their hearts in their mouths for fear of a plane crash. But lately, things in Nigeria seem to have changed for the better. For the last 5 years, there has been no aviation accident. Now, however, incidents are starting to happen again, worrying passengers. Solomon Shodeida reports.
After some years when several planes crashed in Nigeria, 2017 was considered to be the safest year in the country's aviation sector. Nobody has forgotten the terrible disasters from 2005 to 2012, when planes seemed to be falling off the sky. Cases in point were the Bellevue plane crash, the Sosoliso and the Dana disasters, where at least 200 people died. But just as Nigerian passengers were feeling safe again, they were rattled by several incidents. Recently, the emergency door fell off in a Dana aircraft as it landed in Abuja. 2 weeks later, another of these airlines' planes skidded off the runway while landing. Nigerian air passengers are starting to feel that the government is not concerned with their safety. The Nigerian Civil Aviation Authority, NCAA, is the regulatory body for aviation safety in Nigeria. Spokesman and Propagations Manager Samaduro Boye argues that airspace safety is a global issue and that Nigeria is not immune to incidents or accidents.
Aviation is an international business. It has no Nigerian or African color or black man white. As it is done anywhere in the world, once there is an incident or accident, as the case may be, it is expected that an investigation will be carried out. It is when the investigation is conducted and a report is made available that the regulatory authorities will take further steps to take an informed decision based on that report.
Aviation incidents like the recent ones at Dana Air are often linked to weather conditions. Professor Sonny Abubakar Mashi is the Director General CEO of the Nigerian Meteorological Agency, NIMET. NIMET provides weather forecasts and reports for safe operation of flights. He rejects accusations that the agency is in any way responsible for accidents. NIMET does its best despite lack of equipment, he says.
Meteorology, what we do, we predict. And in prediction, normally, it can be 100% accurate. There are almost chances for error because you are using mathematical modeling to be able to make those kind of predictions. Even though there are some little challenges with upgrading and replacement at that level to still provide the information that is required. And a number of flights, especially the international one, we don't have any reason to say that there has been complaint or there have been adverse report from any of them.
Samaduro Boye, spokesman for the aviation regulatory body, believes that Nigeria air safety standards comply with international practices and regulations. Concerning Dana Air incident, he reiterated that passenger safety is of paramount importance to the government.
They are being investigated. We are awaiting a report from the Accident Investigation Bureau, which is another arm of government, an agency that investigates the aviation incidences or accidents. As soon as the report is available, as the case may be, we will take a decision based on the findings and conclusions of the report of that agency on that incident. That is the next thing for us to do. Every airline flying Nigeria in and out of our airspace are adjured to be safe. We are a Category 1 nation. We are audited by ICAO and we are found to be compliant.
It remains to be seen whether this positive outlook will be enough to reassure Nigerian passengers.
Solomon Shundeinde with that report.
Africa on the move.
And now we are still sticking in Nigeria, where people living with disability, we know in many African countries, often means a life of poverty or marginalization. The reality is that in some cases, living with disability is viewed as a bad omen and such people remain a forgotten lot. Nigeria is hoping to change that by coming up with a law to allocate 20% of federal employment to the people with living with disabilities. The National Assembly just passed a bill which, among other things, would also offer social protection and integration for such people. This is the third time such a bill has been passed by the House of Representatives after two former presidents failed to sign it into a law. So, will it become a reality this time? Idris Waisu reports from Abuja.
The hardships faced by people with disability are evident, forcing many to resort to begging on the street as a means of livelihood. Even for the educated ones, it is often a challenge to find a job. Should President Muhammadu Buhari sign the bill into law, it will come as a relief for at least 19 million people living with disability here in Nigeria. Irene Ojibwa Patrick is a lady living with disability in Abuja.
Some employers don't even want to know if you have the skill set they require or the knowledge or the qualifications. The moment they see a disability, they don't want to offer that employment. So if there's going to be a reservation of 20% for persons with disabilities, it's a good one. But again, we also don't want this to end at the level of passing bills and signing it into law.
Please, members, go back to your seats. Thank you, Right Honourable Speaker, Honourable colleagues. My name is Obinna Chidoka. Mr. Speaker, I rise this morning to second that a bill to provide for an act that 20% jobs available in all federal government ministries.
Legislatures debated on the bill with a popular majority vote. Ahmed Usman, a member of Nigeria's House of Representatives, believes it will give an equal job opportunity for all.
Recently, we had master's degree holder that crawl into our chamber with a first class in law. And putting that same person with another lawyer, the chances is that the other lawyer who is physically able to get the job, even though this first class lawyer is better than him, only because of his disability.
So how optimistic are they this time around? Will it be signed into law? A question I pose to Denderson Hart, Chief Executive Officer at the Foundation of Persons with Disabilities in Nigeria.
What we're just feeling, we just expect and hope that this one will not go the way others have gone, that it will hold. We'll all be happier. We'll all be happier because this is a third missionary journey, particularly. He is the first president in the history of this country that will appoint an SSA on disability matter, Amin Buhari. He is the first president. We've never had it. So maybe he will assent to the bill when it gets to him.
As people living with disabilities anxiously await to see if it will be signed into law, there is hope for millions that it will not only reduce discrimination, but enhance the life of people living with disabilities in Nigeria.
Idris Waisu reporting from Abuja.
And there is a lot of things going on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Protuza Nyongesa, thank you so much for listening us. Listening us through the Facebook page. You say you are in Nairobi, Kenya.
Yeah, and of course, we also have many people who are listening to us from Cameroon, as usual. And we are very happy to get your comments. We will read them just if we have time before the end of the program.
Absolutely.
Focus Europe.
Now to Italy, and in just 5 days, they will head to the polls in a general election in which immigration has taken a center stage. One of the questions that kept coming up during the campaign period is who has the right to be an Italian. According to the opinion polls, the governing Democratic Party has steadily been losing support to the former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi centre-right coalition. Berlusconi has promised to deport more than 600,000 illegal immigrants should his coalition form the next government. Angelo Van Schaik with more from Italy.
An anti-immigration rally by the extreme right-wing party Casa Pound in the center of Rome. The reason for this rally is an incident that took place on this very square a few days ago. A 75-year-old homeless woman was raped by a Senegalese immigrant. For Casa Pound, the confirmation that immigration is out of hand. It's estimated that 600,000 immigrants have reached Italy in the last 4 years. That's too many for Casa Pound and for many people who live in this neighborhood.
I've been living here for 50 years now. When I was a child, my mother and I went out during the day and returned at night by ourselves. Today, that's impossible. I'm even scared during the day. There are gangs of different ethnic groups, but the Africans scare me the most.
There are too many immigrants here. It's not dangerous, but it's dirty. They urinate everywhere. Have you been to the park yet? We'll take a look and then we'll talk again.
But it was Luca Traini who put immigration back on the Italian political agenda. On February 3rd, he targeted Africans in a shooting rampage in the central town of Macerata, injuring 8. Traini, a far-right activist, told the authorities he was very angry about the murder of an Italian girl by a Nigerian drugs dealer a few days earlier. For him, it was the straw that broke the camel's back. Former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi stepped it up a notch.
630,000 immigrants have arrived in Italy over the past few years, of which only 30,000 have the right to stay because they're refugees. The other 600,000 are a ticking social time bomb ready to explode.
Berlusconi blames the centre-left for the immigrant invasion and is promising to deport 600,000 illegal immigrants if he wins these elections. A group of Senegalese are in the square where the anti-immigration rally is being held. One of them says they don't understand the problem.
We've never done something wrong. Why should there be a problem? Why should I answer to them? I come here every day after work to meet other Senegalese guys. I'm not a thief or a rapist, and neither are my friends here. I came here to seek a better life. There are also Italians who steal, like there are bad guys amongst us. And that's how the world is.
The immigration debate is getting rough in Italy. But the Macerata shooting and the rape in Rome appear to have drummed up support for Berlusconi's Forza Italia party. And that trend may well continue in the run-up to the vote on March 4th.
That is Angelo Van Schaik reporting from Rome, Italy.
Now, Jane, sticking on that topic of immigration and human trafficking, we have been asking on the 77% who is to blame for human trafficking, and people have actually been engaged on this topic.
Absolutely. Andrea Machumi says, when we face the reality of our situation, we'll be free from blaming anyone for our poverty and our wrongdoing.
And Simon Aubert from France sent us this autumn. He has a different idea about the situation.
Of course, it is the failure of the African governments. If you look at it, the second and third options are all tied, all result from the failure of the African government to take care of its citizens. For example, false hope, false image is passed because you are not in a better place. The people who leave Africa and go to Europe, they give a paint a brighter picture because it is actually brighter.
And going now to a different topic altogether, we did ask on our Facebook, the UN peacekeepers from Ghana have been recalled from their base in South Sudan following allegations of sexual exploitation of women at the site. It is the latest in a spate of related such disclosures.
And we received a lot of reactions, and Cyprus Godwin Adebayo says that peacekeepers should be allowed to go on mission with their wives if possible.
Patrick Kanyike says uniformed peacekeepers are not aid workers. We should not conflate the issue. And he says they are soldiers, military, and must adhere to strict military code of conduct during their work.
And David Kalimbwe and Kali says I should be allowed to peacekeeper with their spouses. It's like everyone is saying this men in uniform should be allowed to go work with their wives wherever they are.
But there's a different and a very good one from Hector Tor, who actually says women should be enlisted to do the job, not the men in this case. And of course, with that, we come to the end of today's program. I'm Zipporah Nyamura.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Thank you so, so much for your time.